The group of pugs were getting ready to disband. Demoralized after wiping to difficult crash paths, they gave up hope that a competent tank would ever arrive. As they were about to disband, a shimmer of hope materialized before them. A mighty Torn warrior, decked out in the latest tier, summoned from the queue as if to answer their prayers. He surveyed the party and immediately took leadership unlike they had never seen before. Alright, listen up. CC your targets, do not let them break. Rogue, Sap X. Hunter, Trap Square. Mage, Sheep Moon. Pulling. The Dark Horse of World of Warcraft Podcasting. This is Sheep Moon.
Good morning, Azeroth. It's 10 a.m. Time for Sheep Moon. Hey, it's DTD. Today is January 23rd, 2013. We're on episode 22 already. And this is going by fast. We're going to be at 50 before you know it. Mark my words. Got a fun-filled show for today. Got a lot of news to go over. Well, some news that I feel like going over. And not one, but two dev blogs to tear apart. Oh, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a good week for me. Heading to Chicago Friday. So if you guys are in the Chicago area and want to meet up, hit me up on the Twitters. Going to be going to the UFC on Fox 6 event Saturday night. We're going to catch the weigh-ins Friday. So if you're in the downtown Chicago area and you want to meet up, have a couple drinks, let me know. I'm down for the drinking. Yes, so we got a lot of stuff to go over in the show today. Let's just go ahead and get started.
Have you checked your email this morning, Mulder?
No, why?
Because I received something unsettling, and I wondered if you've gotten it too.
Yes, we have an email. And, oh my god, we have a voicemail! Yes, our first voicemail. Remember, if you want to send me a voicemail, head over to sheepmoon.com, click on the link on the right-hand side of the screen. It says send a voicemail, and we will play your call on the show. So let's go ahead. Start this off. Let's play our very, very, very inaugural first call.
Hi, D2D. This is SoCal Wow Gal calling to say hello and try out your new function on your website for sending a voicemail. Just want to let you know how much I am enjoying the quest text adventures with Manadius, and I'm having so much fun that I'm actually talking to you, Manadius, and not realizing that you can't hear me. So I hope that you continue this wonderful project. I'm joining the Undead Starting Zone, and I hope you're having a wonderful day on today. This is the Realm Maintenance Day. I'll talk to you again real soon. Bye!
Yay! Yeah, I'm actually having a lot of fun with Quest Text. I've got most of it recorded, most of that uploaded, so I'll be having steady updates for till at least the middle of February. I'm trying to decide what zone to go to next. I have decided, though, that once we complete a zone, if there are instances in that zone, we're going to go ahead and run through them. I'll take one of my higher level characters and we'll run through and we'll do all the quests and stuff in the instances. So that should be fun. Of course, with Tirith's Fall Glades, we do have Scarlet Halls and Scarlet Monastery. So after the starting zone's over, we'll run through those. And then, I'm thinking It's definitely going to be an Alliance zone. I've decided that. I'm going to go back and forth between Horde and Alliance. I was thinking maybe Gnome or Dwarf or Human is next. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. We'll figure it out. I want something that contrasts the darkness of Tirith's Fall Glade, so that kind of rules out Worgen and Night Elf and Draenei. So, I don't know. We'll see what's next. I'm thinking Dwarf or Gnome. Just get Loch Modan out of the way. Although Gnome goes through Gnomeregon now, doesn't it? I actually haven't done that yet. So we might just do Gnome just because I haven't done that starting zone since they redid it. So I think that would be cool to do. So yeah. Thank you very much for the voicemail. Again, go to sheepmoon.com, click on the little red tag on the right hand side of the screen there. And yes. Send me voicemails because they're easier to read because I don't have to read. Next, we do have an email. This one also comes in from SoCal Wow Gal. It says, hello. I wanted to get your rake on the recently announced information that there will be no flying in the new 5.2 zones. I know that you've been playing for a long time, and I was wondering if this is something that makes your blood boil or if it's something that you can live with. From my personal perspective, I don't see what the big deal is. I may be a bit naive, however, since I only started playing at the end of Kata, but I don't quite get why there is all this uproar about not being able to fly. It's not like they make you walk everywhere, you can still use ground mounts. So I'd like to hear your perspective on why this is bad, good, or just a bunch of people complaining just to complain. Love the show! Basically, it's just a bunch of people bitching to bitch. If you've paid attention to the WoW community as long as I have, you know that there will always be bitching about everything. There's nothing that ever gets put into this game that doesn't get bitched about. Ever. As far as my personal perspective, I think it's good. We don't need to fly everywhere. Flying takes a lot of the fun out of questing. Because you're not paying attention so much to what's around you. You know, it's great for efficiency. But for a daily quest hub like the Isle of Thunder King or Thunder Isle or whatever the hell it's called, it doesn't need it. You know, when we went and did Tol Barad, there was no flying in Tol Barad. Understandable, because it's a PvP zone. There was no flying at the Isle of Kel Danas, and that place worked out great, especially on a PvP server. There was just world PvP everywhere, and then people were complaining, oh, I can't finish my dailies because people are attacking me. Well, you shouldn't have rolled up on a PvP server then. Everybody's gonna bitch about everything, but I think it's good. I personally love the fact that there was no flying in Pandaria until you ding 90. It was like that in Lich King, it was like that in Burning Crusade. And in Vanilla, obviously, there was no flying. This way you can kind of get the lay of the land up close and personal. Now in Kata just felt disjointed anyway, but I wasn't as connected to those zones because, you know, I could just fly around it. So, for as far as this daily quest hub, I'm glad that there's no flying. I'm very happy about that, actually. Flying is convenience, not a right, in my personal opinion. I do like that they designed some zones to be flying only, like Ice Crown. Ice Crown was designed to be a flying zone. In fact, I don't even think you could go questing in Ice Crown until you had your flying. Which back then, you couldn't even get until you were 77. So, yes, I'm okay with that. As far as flying for alts, I don't really care, honestly. Alts are alts. I don't care so much about my alts as I do my main, obviously. So, with my alts, I don't do half the content that I do in my main. Because I have a hard time doing stuff multiple times. Like, if I go get exalted on one character with a faction, for example, I have a really hard time doing it again. For perfect example, I got exalted with the Klaxi on my shaman before I ever did on my main. Am I ever going to get exalted on my main? Maybe eventually, but it's not a big deal. I don't care as much. But yeah, I like the fact that there's no flying in the new zone. Especially since I've been on this crusade to get some world PvP in on Vecna Lash, and nobody wants to play with me. I do my dominance offensive dailies. I leave my flag on all the time. The only time that I ever was engaged in PvP was when the Alliance were attacking Domination Point. And they weren't attacking me, I was slaughtering them. And they never retaliated against me. It was no fun. Now, I'm originally from a PvP server. I first rolled up on Shadow Moon, which is a heavy PvP server. It used to be back in the day. I like World PvP. I'm good at World PvP for some reason. I don't know why. And I don't want a server transfer off Vecna Lash because this is where all my friends are. If they all transfer to a PvP server, hell yeah, I'd be going with them. And I'd be happy about it. But if I could have a chance to engage in some world PvP by not having flying mounts in the area, then I'm all for that. All for that. Well, that's it for the emails this week. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to send into the show, just email me at sheepmoonblog@gmail.com. Once again, sheepmoonblog@gmail.com. I love getting emails. Nothing makes me happier. Well, okay, let's be honest. Some stuff makes me happier, but I get very happy
when there's emails.
So since emails are done, let's get on with the show. Maybe. If I can click. Ah.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
Now we kind of have some breaking news. Breaking news on the Twitters. Ghostcrawler hints at unannounced feature. This is in response to Ricky Reeves. Ricky tweets, Wrath of the Lich King gave us Random Dungeon Finder. Kata gave us LFR. Which new mop feature do you think has had or will have a huge impact? Ghostcrawler replies, we haven't announced it yet. And the internet exploded! Everybody's speculating about what this new feature could be. Now, me personally, I kind of feel bad for Ghostcrawler. I mean, it's like everything that that man says is written into law somehow. He's like Moses, carving things into stone, and then we will all abide by him and hang off that every word. I feel bad for the guy. The guy can't even say he likes chicken strips without getting some sort of comment about it. But I guess that's part of the burden of being famous. I wouldn't know. However, what could this new feature be? Considering, in my personal opinion, that the Dungeon Finder kind of ruined the server community, and LFR gave us the much-awaited easy mode, but is still failing hardcore. We all know how I feel about LFR. I'm more worried about what this could be and what it's going to ruin. What is there left to ruin? No, I think they've done a pretty good job of ruining everything. This game is a lot different than it was 4 or 5 years ago. Some say for the better, some say for the worse. Yeah, there are some good quality of life improvements that have gone into the game. But there's a lot of things that have been absolutely destroyed, personally. So, I'm not sure what this is about. Now, he did post a reply tweet not too long ago saying that he wasn't trolling. There really is a feature that's coming. And, where's it at? Okay, here it is. It says, I'll just say I had a specific feature in mind and wasn't just trolling. Some will love it, some will say, this is it. Maybe it's Dance Studio. Yeah, right. We're never getting Dance Studio. Just give it up. So, hopefully, maybe we'll hear about it sometime in the next year. or so, I'm not holding my breath on it. And you shouldn't either. Because we all know that even though Blizzard has changed quite a bit, they're still not very impatient. They'll put it out when it's ready. Activision Blizzard Q4 2012 results on conference on February 7th. Basically, we're going to have another earnings call on February 7th. And I'm kind of interested in what this is going to entail. Now, it's possible that Mike Morhaime might reveal the details of BlizzCon 2013. We might hear when approximately tickets for that will go on sale. I'm more curious as to find out what our subscriber base looks like. Because at last I knew, we were right around 10 million again. We did gain some people back from MOP. Did we go up? Did we go down? Or did we stay the same? I think we're probably around the same. I think we're probably around 10 million. Although it wouldn't surprise me if it dropped down a little bit. I'd say... I'm going to go ahead and say that we're at 9.5 million. Maybe we lost 500,000 people. That's my guess. I don't know for sure. Obviously, I have no insider information. I wish I did. If you work at Blizzard, sheepmanblog@gmail.com. I will keep your identity secret. But let's talk a little bit about BlizzCon. Like, what do we think is going to come out of BlizzCon? Well, obviously, they're going to announce the Diablo 3 expansion. We know... That's almost a given. We're going to get that. We're going to get some more info on Blizzard All-Stars. The Dota. The Blizzard Dota. I think we're going to finally see something about Titan at this BlizzCon. Call me crazy, but I think we're finally going to hear what Titan is. We're not going to hear a whole lot about it. It's just going to be like a teaser. But... Titan, a.k.a. StarCraft Ghost or Halo MMO, whichever it ends up being. We're going to hear it. That's my guess. But it's going to be kind of nice to see, like, I'm really interested in how much business Blizzard's actually doing compared to the Activision side with, you know, Call of Duty and Skylanders and all that stuff. Skylanders is actually kind of a big hit. I bought it for my daughter for her birthday, and she freaking loves it. But there is a lot of money you can sink into that game, like buying all the figures and stuff. I mean, you can... It's a serious investment. It really is. So, I'm kind of curious about that. We'll see how that goes. Next article. World of Warcraft, Dawn of the Aspects, Part 1. By Richard A. Knack is a must-read for those who love to read about the dragon aspects. In this story, not only do we witness the origins of the dragon aspects before the Titans bestowed upon them their powers of in the far past, but also a contemporary times update post-Deathwing's fall. Shortly after the Age of Mortals began and the dragon aspects lost their powers, Kallak finds an item of power that allows him to see through the eyes of Malygos, back to an era where Galakrond was alive, and the dragon aspects were still mere proto-drakes. The 5-part story will be published as an ebook every month. Pre-order them now to get your copies reserved and ready on launch date. Now, the first part of this book comes out February 19th. And then we get one pretty much every month after that until part 5 comes out on June 17th. And it's interesting. It's interesting to... know what the dragon aspects would be like before they got all their powers. And I'm actually interested as to what they've been doing after they gave up their powers. Because I haven't seen a whole lot about what powers they retained. I mean, obviously they're going to have dragon powers, and you would think that they would be more powerful than just normal dragons. So this is interesting to me, and hopefully, it'll be like a dollar. I'm hoping it's like a dollar. Because then I can afford it. But if not, you know, we'll get it eventually. So definitely be on the lookout for that. It looks like we've got about 3 weeks or so. 4 weeks, nearly. Just a little under a month. So, check into that. Next item.
up on the roster of news.
New 5.2 Raid Charm, the Mogu Charm of Fate. Now, I'm not going to go into this because I'm sure every single other show in the world is going to be talking about this. And you know me, I'm not conformist. So just to say, we're going to get a new charm for 5.2. The Elder Charms of Good Fortune are still going to be good for Tier 14. But for Tier 15, we're going to need new charms that are purchased with the same currency. So, if you have all the gear that you want from Tier 14, which is probably not a lot of people, unless you're only going for LFR gear. But if you have all your gear, save your lesser charms. Don't turn them into elder charms, because you're going to be able to use your lesser charms to buy the new charms. Granted, you'll still only be able to buy a certain number a week, but then you won't have to do so many dailies. So that's always good. So save them up if you need them. And that's really all I'm going to say about that. In case you didn't notice, Heart of the Swarm trailer was released. I'm not big into StarCraft, but the lore of the game interests me. And if you have any interest in the lore at all, you should go check out the cinematic. It's like 3 minutes long. It's not too bad. Now, completely under the radar because of the Heart of the Swarm cinematic intro coming out, the Elder Scrolls Online intro was released also. And you can now sign up for the beta for the Elder Scrolls Online. Now, that is a game that I am excited for. I'm a big Elder Scrolls player. I played Morrowind. I played Oblivion. I played Skyrim quite a bit. So that is going on right now. You can go sign up for the beta. There is actually a link on MMO Champion where you can go sign up for it. It's a closed beta right now, so not everybody's going to get in. And I'm going to go ahead and make a small announcement here. If I, in fact, do get in to the Elder Scrolls Online beta, I will start a podcast for the Elder Scrolls Online. Yep, because that's what I do. It's really interesting to try to get into a game when it's first released. Like, I would have loved to have started this show way back in WoW beta. That would have been cool. Like, you know, like the Instance and World of Warcast and all those, you know, really long-tenured shows. It would have been cool to get in when they did. And I'm envious of that. But, you know, of course, I didn't start playing until Burning Crusade, so that's kind of my own fault. But there hasn't been a whole lot of details released on Elder Scrolls Online yet. We don't know if it's going to be a sub. We don't know. I doubt it's going to be a free-to-play. I'll go ahead and call that out now. I highly doubt that it's going to be a free-to-play. Because Elder Scrolls Online probably has the most potential to compete with WoW. Because Elder Scrolls has a very dedicated fan base, like just as dedicated as WoW does. Could it be the WoW killer? I don't think anything could kill WoW. Blizzard will kill WoW. But do I think it's going to be the most successful MMO aside from WoW? It's got the potential to. It really does. Especially if it uses the Guild War 2 model and not do a sub, but just, you know, you buy it, you own it, and that's it. But I think it's guaranteed to say that it's not going to be a free-to-play. This is too big of a title to go free-to-play. Too big. Bigger than DDO, which is Dungeons & Dragons Online. It's bigger than Lord of the Rings Online. I mean, this is huge for gamers. So, sign up for that beta. I'll keep you updated. If I happen to get into the beta, providing there isn't an NDA, I will start a new show. Because, oh, why not? I like doing that stuff. That's really all for news that I'm going to cover anyway. There's a lot of blue tweets, but it gets kind of daunting to fish through all those blue tweets all the time. Maybe if I, happen to do some stuff beforehand, before the show starts, maybe I could clean it up a little bit. However,
there really isn't a whole lot. Here's a couple that we go over. A nice little chunk right here.
Yes, I need a secretary. Taking applications. You work for free. Shibun.com. So, Crossrealm Zones and PvP. Here's a little interesting tidbit. Because I love World PvP. That's next to raiding. World of PvP is probably my favorite thing about this game. So let's go over this a little bit. Players have always been able to kill low-level characters. This isn't something new with CRZ. Does it seem to anybody else like CRZ is just kind of the scapegoat for everything? It seems to me like, oh, there's something wrong out in the world. That's CRZ's fault. No, it's been there for a while. Get over it. PvP realms were designed right from the get-go to be a place where random acts of PvP could take place outside of a handful of safe zones, and we have no plans to change this. Thank you. Thanks for having a spine. If you don't like World PvP, people, roll on a Care Bear server, as I call it. Just roll on a normal PvE server. There's nothing wrong with being on a PvE server. If you don't like World PvP, there's nothing wrong with it at all. The only difference between the two is you can turn your flag off and just choose not to PvP. If you want to go do your dailies and not get ganked, there you go. If you really have that much of a problem with it, you are on the wrong server. Granted, most of the most popular servers in WoW right now are all PvP servers. And people just decide to go roll up characters on those servers because they're highly populated without realizing that it's a PvP server and you can get ganked. You can get ganked a lot. So my solution is don't roll on a PvP server. Simple as that. Ganking is always a threat on these realms. There have always been players who enjoy it and who go out of their way to do so. It just comes with the PvP realm, unfortunately. There's nothing unfortunate about that. Yeah, it sucks to get ganked. When you're leveling your first tune, it's a pain in the ass because you get ganked and you get camped. That's the life of a PvP server. When I do quest text, I'm probably going to get ganked a lot because I will roll up on PvP servers. I have no fear of PvP. Of course, it's going to suck where I can't log out and get on my main and just wreck kids. But that's the price I pay. The key to surviving on a PvP server is getting into a good guild that if there is some sort of PvP going on and you're getting ganked, you have friends that can come and help you. That's what got me through a PvP server. I leveled a priest on a PvP server. A priest! The most easily ganked back then class in the entire game. How did I make it through? I had a guild. I said in guild chat, hey, I'm getting camped. Five or six guys would come out and just slaughter them. And then I go continue questing. Or it just turned into a giant PvP battle, which was also fun. So, yeah. Play smart. You have to play smarter on a PvP server. So, there are some comments to one of the blog posts. However, we're going to talk about the blog posts first. Now, there are two of them. There is one that is encounter tuning, how they decide when stuff needs to be nerfed or buffed. There's also a PvP gear blog. Now, there's some interesting pros and cons to both these blogs, and we're going to go over it bit by bit. So this might be a little bit long of a show. But you guys love my show, so you don't care. On that note, we're going to take a musical break because these blogs are long and are going to take a long time to go over. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We'll talk about... let's talk about the PvP blog first. Musical roulette time, I think. What's the wheel going to give us today? Who knows? I have no idea. I'll be right back. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Ro from the Realm Maintenance Podcast, and you are listening to the most cynical critic of the horrendous LFR loot system. This is Sheep Moon.
Oh yeah, Panama. Gotta love it. Gotta love a little Van Halen in your life. So, we've got these two little blog posts that we're going to talk about. So we're going to start with this PvP gear in 5.2 and beyond from Dexari on the official Battle.net website. So, let's just start it off real quick. Change is coming to PvP gear in the relatively near future, and we wanted to provide a not-so-brief update on the improvements we're planning. While pulling the curtain aside so you can see the thought processes that motivated the coming changes, we also thought this would be a great time to get the World of Warcraft PvP community involved in the discussion. Now, there's a few main issues we're going to go over on this blog post. Well, so right now it's pretty common for players that have a head start at the start of the season to earn the best gear quickly and gain a dominating position on the ladder with very high MMRs or matchmaker ratings. And then it's pretty common for those players to basically stop playing so much and kind of just sitting back and holding their position to the very end of the season so they can get their gladiator rewards. They're trying to stop that. They don't want people to burst at the beginning of the season, get all the gear, get a high rating, and then stop playing. The other problem with it is that people that start at the middle of the season have a hard time gaining ranks in the ladder because, well, you don't have the gear to compete and you just get slaughtered because, as much as I disagree with it, PvP is really all about gear. If you don't have the gear, you're not going to get anywhere in PvP, and that's a fact. That's something that's been an integral part of PvP ever since Burning Crusade, when they introduced the resilience system. Now, I feel that PvP should be 100% skill-based. But let's be honest, this is an MMO, this is an RPG, this entire game is based around gear. Everything you do in this game is for gear. So it's kind of hard to have an entire style of play based on skill when the rest of the game is based on gear. It won't happen, it'll never happen, and quite frankly, we should stop asking for it. That's why PvP on the Arena Pass servers are so much fun, because everybody's got the same gear. So you don't have to worry about it so much. But, you know, whatever. So, here's a section about the rating requirements. The current rating requirements on PvP gear create an artificially sharp division between players over 2200 rating and those below that, which is unduly difficult to cross. We prefer that teams progress up the ladder on a curve against gradually more difficult opponents, instead of running into a wall at a certain rating. So, basically, over time, the gap in power between Honor and Conquest gear has widened over time. This happened in part because it's necessary for us to preserve the balance in power between PvP and PvE gear so that one doesn't become the most obvious path to victory for the other. Right now, there are 4 tiers of PvE items, but only 2 tiers of PvP items. To keep honor items from being the best choice for entry into PvP, they needed to have a lower item level than equivalent raid finder items. At the same time, conquest gear still needs to be better for PvP than heroic raid items, which puts it way over on the opposite end of the power scale from its honor counterpart. While there are items that bridge the gap between raid finder and heroic raid loot, there really haven't been any PvP items to bridge the gap between honor and conquest gear. We plan to solve that problem by introducing new tiers of PvP items, changing which currencies it takes to buy items and when, by making PvP weapons more readily available in general. So, think, and I've always thought, that they should just make PvP items item level 1. But put a level requirement on it. That way you can't use PvP gear to get into raids. Because I have a big problem with using PvP gear to get into raids in general. I think it's disgusting. So that would solve that. But obviously I don't work for Blizzard, so none of my ideas will ever go into effect. Take note. Now, moving forward, here's the changes that they're talking about. Team rating inflation. As we've mentioned previously, we want to see the ladder rankings decided toward the end of the season and not a foregone conclusion dictated by what happens at the start. As discussed in the PvP and Mist of Pandaria dev water cooler, as of 5.2, team rating will gradually increase as players participate in PvP over the course of the season. We expect the new system to help ensure that the ladder remains active at all ratings and that the competition stays fierce from start to finish. Now here's the gear changes. To accomplish the goals of making PvP more accessible and less punishing, gearing more consistent and flexible, and flattening the power curve out over the course of a season, there are significant changes in the works. So here we go. 2200 rating requirements removed from all PvP gear. This will happen in 5.2. I like this change. Because as I mentioned earlier, once getting above 2200 is hard, because when you're sitting at 2100, 2150, and you fight those 2200 rated teams, they've got better gear than you do. So they just slaughter you no matter how good you are. Again, this is an item game, not a skill game. So, removing that rating requirement, I agree with. Now gear will be available in 4 tiers. Dreadful Gladiator gear will be crafted. I believe we have Dreadful Gladiator gear now that can be crafted. I think that's Dreadful. Not sure. Malevolent Gladiator's gear, including weapons, will be purchased with honor points. New tier PvP items, Tyrannical Gladiator's gear, will be purchased with conquest points. Tyrannical Gladiator's gear can be purchased for honor after 27,000 conquest points are earned for the season. So basically, you can bash your head against PvP for the entire season and still access this tier of gear. I'm not sure how I feel about that, to be honest. I don't believe that a playstyle that is so skill-based, or supposedly skill-based, has an option to let you beat your head against it until you get items. I don't like that. I don't like being rewarded for bashing your head against something, especially in a skill-based system. However, if you're stuck at a certain rating and you just can't get above that, then it's not so bad, maybe. For example, right now in my twos team, I'm stuck at around 1450 arena rating. We go up a little bit, we get demolished, we go back down, we conquer, and then it's a yo-yo between 1500 and let's say 1380. We just keep jumping back and forth. Now, according to this system of 5.2, if I keep bashing my head against that, I'm going to be able to buy better gear no matter what. I honestly don't know how I feel about that. It's a benefit to those players like me that aren't incredibly skilled at PvP. But then again, it seems kind of like a cop-out. Because if I'm coming up against a 1500 rated team that doesn't play as much, so just playing better than me, I can sit here and bash my head and get better gear than them and potentially beat them and get my rank up. So, again, I don't know how I feel about that yet. I don't know. Now there's Elite Tyrannical Gladiator's gear, and that can only be purchased with conquest points after 27,000 conquest points have been earned for the season. So essentially, once you hit the 27,000 conquest point mark, your conquest point gear can be purchased with honor gear, and you have access to a new tier of gear. So essentially, you're upgrading your gear. You're going to a new tier of gear in the middle of a season. Again, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know. It's almost like having two tiers of gear in one. That's like saying, well, you know, if you're bashing your head on the 5.0 raids and bash, and then all of a sudden, oh, you have access to heroic gear without clearing the current tier. Essentially. I don't know. Like I said, I have a big problem with bashing your head against something and being rewarded for it. Anyway, conquest point weapons can only be purchased after 7,250 conquest points have been earned for the season. So essentially like it is right now. There's a conquest point cap you have to hit before you're allowed to buy conquest weapons in this current tier. So really that hasn't changed any. Now the 2200 rating requirements on gear will be removed in patch 5.2, and when that happens, the only barrier to acquiring the top of the line elite gear will be the 27,000 conquest point seasonal currency requirement and the 7254 weapons. While highly rated players will still earn gear more quickly, there won't be an invisible wall to progression at 2200 rating. I think it fixed that issue, but it creates a new issue. As SoCal WildGal in the chat says, it's getting a reward for failing. I don't think you should ever get rewards for failing anything. So it fixes one problem, but it creates another one. Blizzard will never learn. Every time Blizzard puts in a fix for something, they create a new problem. Like when they put in the looking for dungeon system back in Wrath. Now all of a sudden we got this huge problem with ninjas. We got this huge problem with guys being douchebags because they know they can't get kicked for 15 minutes. And back in Wrath, dungeons only lasted for like 15 minutes. So you were stuck with that person because you couldn't kick them. Now they're creating a similar problem in PvP. And I'm sure that the PvP community is freaking out about this. I actually haven't read a whole lot of what they think about this change. So, I don't know. You shouldn't be rewarded for failure. You shouldn't create a new problem to try to fix a problem that not everybody's even going to see. I mean, getting a 2200 rating in Arena is pretty difficult. I mean, once you get up to the, you know, 1500s, 1600s, the competition gets a lot tougher. So that's kind of like saying they're going to nerf Shaw of Anger because not enough people are killing it. But leave the rest of the heroic modes alone. So if you can clear the harder heroic modes to get to Shaw of Anger, Shaw of Anger will be a piece of cake to drop on heroic. Or not Shaw of Anger, Shaw of Fear. Whichever one's on Terrace. Is that Shaw of Fear? That's Shaw of Fear. That's what I meant. Go by what I meant, not what but I said. Dang. Now, patches that don't include the start of a new season, such as patch 5.3... will offer players the opportunity to purchase conquest point weapons without first meeting the 7250 conquest point seasonal requirement for them. We're relaxing these restrictions because by the midpoint of the season, the restriction has served its purpose and no longer necessary. It's worth noting here that the 27,000 conquest points earned requirement must still be met to buy elite weapons and armor in every season. So essentially they're saying that we don't want you to buy conquest points too early. But if it's in the middle of the season, yeah, you can buy them whenever you want. We don't care. I kind of get that. And I somewhat agree with it. I mean, if you're in the middle of a PvP season, as I mentioned earlier, it's really hard to be competitive because you're so far behind. Easing the restrictions on joining mid-season, I approve. Because it gives those good players that decided to take a break for whatever reason a chance to catch up and be competitive. I like that. Now, in terms of relative power, we're tuning the item levels, PvP power, and resilience on the new set of PvP items, so the difference between Malevolent and Elite Tyrannical Gladiators gear is similar to the relationship between this season's Dreadful and Malevolent Gladiators gear. This helps accomplish the goal of smoothing out the power curve by adding a tier in the middle of the PvP gear spectrum. Also, to add choices and flexibility,
Once the seasonal currency requirement is met, players will have the option to purchase tyrannical pieces for honor, which should allow players more easily experiment with alternate stat loadouts and specs. Okay.
Cool, I guess.
Now, the mid-season catch-up. I actually like this part. This part I'm okay with. Players who are starting their journey into PvP mid-season start significantly behind the gearing curve, as I mentioned earlier. While we want to avoid invalidating the efforts of players who have competed for the whole season, we agree with the feedback we've received that the starting gap is too large. So a new comp quest point catch-up cap will be implemented using the following formula. And there's math. Current week of the season times 1,000 minus conquest you've earned so far. Here are some examples of how this is going to work. Player A is starting PvP for the first time in week 10 of the season and hasn't earned any conquest points at all that season. He will have an additional cap of 10,000 points added to his normal weekly rating base cap. Player B has already earned 5,000 conquest points by week 10, so she would have an additional cap of 5,000 points added to her normal weekly rating base cap. Player C has been playing all season long and has earned more than 10,000 conquest points by week 10. He only has a normal weekly cap to work with, but should already be on their way to being well geared. If a player redeems their catch-up cap by earning all these points, then they'll begin the next week at their normal weekly rating base cap. They should miss more. Should they miss more weeks, then the catch-up cap accrues again. I like this. I like this change because, as not being a diehard PvPer, there's some weeks where I don't cap my Valor or Valor Conquest. So while I'll still be behind because the Conquest cap, if you're below 1600 rating, I believe, or 1500, or it might even be 1800. I don't remember. Is 1,800 conquest points. You can earn 1,800 conquest points from doing random BGs and arenas. Now, while you still get a benefit for capping every single week, if you don't cap, you're not quite as penalized. Because let's say, for example, you don't cap for a month, right? That's 7,200 conquest points that you've lost. Now, if I come back after that month with this new cap, I'll be able to get my 1,800 points for that week, plus an additional 4,000 for missing. So I'll be able to get 5,800. While it's still less than the 9,000, I'll still be able to catch up a little bit. So it's still rewarding players for participating every week, but they're trying to help people catch up. Good job. I'm going to go ahead and say that right now, Blizzard. Good job with this. This is one of the very few things that I am actually for that you've put out. Amidst all the crap and the bad decisions you've made, this is good. This mid-season catch-up bit. The gear, I don't know. I don't know about the gear so much, but this conquest point thing, bravo. I don't say bravo to you very much anymore, Blizzard, so take that for what it's worth. Bravo. It almost makes it exciting to PvP again because now I don't feel the pressure to cap every week. And that's good. I don't want to be pressured in PvP. If I was a main spec PvPer, if I was a Gladiator Arena guy, if I was vying to be the best, that top 0.5% that gets the sweet ass mount at the end of the season, then yeah, I wouldn't worry about it so much. But I'm not that guy. I am a raider that enjoys PvP every once in a while. So this is good for me. And it gives arena players, the top end 2,200 plus arena players, more incentive to play and more teams to play against. Because once you get up to that 2,200 rating, it's possible you could be playing the same few teams over and over and over again because there's not that many people above 2,200. Now, you're going to have more people at that cap, supposedly. It's going to give you more people to play. Having more people to play is never, ever a bad thing. Ever. So good job. So just to cap, just to sum it all up again, there's no more raider requirements on PvP gear. Malevolent gladiators gear, including weapons, will be available with honor points. That's this season, I believe. New tier conquest point gear will be added that becomes available once 27,000 conquest points have been earned for this season. Now, granted, you can only earn 1,800 points if you're a low ranking. So, I mean, it's going to take you a while to hit that cap. You're looking at, what, I don't know, let's pull out a calculator. Calculator! Alright, let's see. 27,000 divided by 1,800. It's going to take you 15 weeks. If you cap every week for 15 weeks, you'll be able to buy this elite tyrannical gear. So there's still a bar to entry, but it's not a hard bar. I don't mind. Really? That's not too bad. It's not too bad at all. In conclusion, overall, we expect that these changes will create a more active and competitive PvP environment, narrow the gear gap between the highest rated players and those still working their way up the ladder, and open the door for more experimentation in terms of class or spec. We look forward to hearing your thoughts, blah, blah, so on and so forth. I think this should have been done a long time ago, but better late than never. Again, with the gear, we'll have to see how that plays out. I think it's going to hurt more than help. I don't like being rewarded for failure. But the mid-season catch-up bit, I do like that. That's good. Good job on that, Blizzard. And that's really it for the PvP blog. If you have questions or comments you'd like to make on that blog, email me, sheepmoonblog@gmail.com. Once again, sheepmoonblog@gmail.com. Or you can go to sheepmoon.com and send me a voicemail. Because, as you guys can tell, I'm terrible at reading. So send me a voicemail. Why not? And it takes a lot less time than writing out an email. It's all about time these days, right?
Right.
So I think we're going to take another quick musical break before we go into the next blog. And this one is probably going to get a little dicey. Talking about encounter tuning. Oh, I'm sure I've got something to say about this. Now, I haven't read either one of these blogs yet. I want you guys to have my honest first impression so far. That's how I like to do it. So, haven't read this yet. Might browse over it during the music break, but overall, haven't read it. So, while I do that, let's do some musical roulette. Yep, musical roulette. Alrighty. I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Ha! No music for you, podcast listener! Unless you tune in live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. only on twitch.tv/sheepmoon. Tune in live. Or forever be damned to hear this message.
I love bare naked ladies so much. They are one of my favorite bands ever. They were actually my dad's favorite band. Rest his soul. Love Bare Naked Ladies. But enough about Bare Naked Ladies. We've got another blog to talk about. This blog, entitled Encounting Tuner by Watcher. Encounter Tuning by Watcher, rather. I have a feeling I'm going to have something to say about this. And I've skimmed this a little bit, but we'll go over it in its entirety right now. In this blog, I'd like to shed some light on an aspect of our design that may unfortunately seem inscrutable or even arbitrary. how and when we make a judgment to our raid encounters once they're on the live servers. The only changes we jump on immediately to fix are clearly irritating bugs that should never benefit the player in any way. For example, issues that can cause players to fail to receive loot from a boss, glitches that cause an encounter to evade or reset prematurely, etc. Thanks to our internal QA team and the feedback from players on our test realms, those are relatively few in number. Which is good. I remember back in the day when Vaz was unkillable. I remember Freya being bugged as hell in Ulduar. I remember in ICC we went to pull the Blood Princes and the Blood Queen just came down from upstairs and wiped us all immediately. That was fun. I remember accidentally pulling Morose while pulling Attunement, the Huntsman, in Kara. So I'm glad those bugs are gone. I'm glad that there's enough testing going on that we don't encounter those bugs a lot, because that's the most frustrating thing ever, is coming up on an encounter and having some sort of bug where you can't kill it. Kind of sucks. Now, other than these clear-cut cases, virtually every change has some negative cost to it, such that the benefits must clearly be evident in order to justify making them. If we fix a bug that allows for an unintended strategy on a fight, then the following week there will be raid groups that previously had a working strategy on an encounter and will now have to relearn it. If we reduce the difficulty of an encounter, there will always be groups who were very close to a kill on the pre-nerf version whose victory feels cheapened as a result, and so forth. Yeah, I understand both of these. Remember the Serenite bombs on Lich King? Where every engineer in the world used Serenite bombs as part of their rotation. My paladin was an engineer and used Serenite bombs on his rotation. But when those bombs would bring the platform back up on the Lich King, whereas making an entire mechanic of the fight ignorable, then, yeah, unintended game mechanic. There's also a couple here that they go over too, but stuff like that, that should be fixed. That should be hot fixed right away. And I'm of the opinion that if you take advantage of one of those bugs, then you should be denied that boss kill and have to go back and do it the legit way. I'll give an example of this when it comes up. Now, the second one is reducing the difficulty of an encounter. I don't think that should ever happen. Ever. If you can't beat an encounter the way it's made, you shouldn't beat it. Blizzard shouldn't have to worry about, oh, well, not so many people are killing Illagon. We should nerf it. No, you should not nerf it. You should leave it alone, because you have LFR for that reason. You made LFR specifically so we could see the content regardless of how difficult it was. Why are you nerfing normal modes? Why does it matter how many people kill bosses in normal mode? Leave bosses hard, damn it. Ugh. God, we're two paragraphs in and I'm already yelling. This is gonna be fun. I better drink some water. I wish I was vodka. Alright. Now, given this background, let's look at some of the adjustments we've made to the 5.0 raid zones over the course of the past months, broken down to a few general categories. There's actually only two categories. Apparently, a few is now two. The first category, unintended tactics. Our players are ingenious and adept at coming up with clever solutions to the challenges posed by our raid encounters. While we have learned from past experience that, to an extent, rule number 14 of encounter design, if it's possible to kite adds instead of killing them, someone will kite them instead of killing them. We are still unable to always anticipate the lengths to which our players will go to overcome a difficult encounter. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. You heard that right there. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. And often one of the hallmarks of a great encounter is that it is open to multiple approaches, depending on the strengths and weaknesses of an individual raid group. I can think of three distinct approaches that we saw to handle the Molten Elemental summoned by Heroic Ragnaros, for example, and I'm sure there are more out there. For example, a common tactic on the Heroic mode of Amber Shaper Unsock in the Heart of Fear is to have a dedicated transformed player who maintains a destabilized stack on Unsock throughout the entire second phase of the fight, when he's otherwise nearly invulnerable and the raid's attention is focused on the Amber Monstrosity. This is only possible due to a bug. Now, okay, let's stop here. If something is only possible due to a bug, that should be fixed. That's like the platforms on Lich King. That's like, that's a bug. That needs to be fixed. Because it's not how the encounter's supposed to go. I agree with that. However, fixing a separate bug late in development, ensuring that Amber Strike could always interrupt the otherwise uninterruptible monstrosity, caused Amber Strike to also bypass Unsock's shield in Phase 2. Oops. This would have been a simple bug to fix, but we chose not to do so. This was a clever tactic, and while it made Phase 3 of the encounter relatively simple, it did so at the expense of adding length, challenge, and complexity to the first two phases of the fight. Kudos to the players who first came up with it. Okay, so they just said that it was a bug, but kudos to people defining it. Yet they said earlier that if it's a bug that provides an unintentional way to do the encounter, then that's bad. They've just went back on their own point already. If it's a bug and if it's not intended, it should be fixed. That scenario where they figured out how to do it on a boss that's supposed to be immune, or basically immune, shouldn't have ever happened. Shouldn't have. As a general matter, unintended tactics were only a problem when they either trivialize an encounter or when they simultaneously are the right, i.e. easier, way to do the fight and make it less fun in the process. Here's a couple of examples that they give. Garajal the Spiritbinder, which is the third boss in Mogoshan Vaults. On the first night of heroic progression through Mogoshan Vaults, heroic Garajal proved to be an incredibly tough test for the damage-dealing capability of the best raid guilds in the world. A number of groups were a few percent shy of a kill, but it appeared quite possible that it would simply require another week worth of gear upgrades to get there. We would have been fine with that, but then one raid group noticed that one of the trolls before Garajal cast a massive haze buff on itself that was spell stealable. The raid kept a couple of those enemies crowd controlled throughout the encounter, periodically breaking them out to let them cast their buffs for the mage to spell steal. This gave them the extra bit of damage that they needed, and Garajal fell. Other guilds got wind of this tactic and were attempting to utilize it as well. We definitely didn't want the fight to require the awkward use of spell steal and bringing other mobs into the encounter, mandating the use of multiple mages in order to meet the DPS check for initial kills. But we also didn't want an unfair playing field in the heroic progression race, with one guild able to continue progressing in the instance while others were stuck behind a slightly out of reach DPS check and unable to take advantage of the trick that had been used to secure the first kill. As such, we made a hotfix that prevented the buff from being spell stolen, but also reduced Garajal's health by 5% to offset the extra damage that the mages with the buff would have done. Are you serious? So let's have one guild figure out a cheap way to beat the boss, and then let's just nerf it for everybody else. It makes perfect sense! Ugh. All they would have had to have done is that first guild that killed heroic Garajal, take that kill away from them. Let them wait the other freaking week. And don't nerf the boss. Oh, come on. Is it really so hard to do that? This is why we can't have nice things, ladies and gentlemen. This is why. Because Blizzard doesn't want to hold anybody back. Oh, we don't want to make them wait a week because somebody already killed it. Pathetic. Take that boss kill away from them. You did it to Insidia back in Lich King when they glitched the Lich King encounter. They got a ban. They got banned for doing that, and they got the Lich King kill taken away. You know what they did? They went in on alts and they killed it again anyway without glitching it. That's all you had done. Take the kill away from them and let them do it the next week just like everybody else. Instead, Blizzard, with their stupid, idiotic philosophy of making sure people kill stuff, have to nerf the boss. Ugh. So now, for the rest of time, Garalon has a 5% nerf on heroic mode. Yay! Thank you, whoever did that.
Ugh, man. I don't understand this.
Next. Next section of this. Exploits versus creative use of game mechanics. And this is a debate that's been going on almost as long as a hardcore versus casual debate. I'd like to take a moment to note that what this guild did was not an exploit in the sense of cheating, bad, wrong, or against the rules of the game. Players use spell steal to steal a beneficial effect from a mob, which is what the spell is supposed to do, and the beneficial effect increased the power of the mage, which is what it's supposed to do. This was the essence of creative use of game mechanics. Note that this is not to say that it isn't possible to violate the code of conduct by using spell steal in general. If you find a spell you can steal that causes you to damage nearby allies, and you can take it back to town to grief newbies, that's a little different. Well, that's your own damn fault! Let's put a spell in the game that players can use, but they need to make sure they use it carefully, or we're gonna ban them. If spell steal is such an issue, take it out. Spell steal is a cool spell, and a lot of people are gonna rage. I mean, people are already raging that it has such a high cooldown. But if spell steal is causing all these exploits, take the damn thing out. That's like what they did with Divine Intervention for Paladins. Divine Intervention can glitch a lot of fights. For those that weren't around when Divine Intervention was in the game, this was a pally spell that the Paladin could cast on any friendly player, right? It would kill the pally, but it would make the player that it was cast on immune to everything for like 2 minutes or something like that. They were immune to everything. It was used a lot of times on like a healer. If you were going to wipe, you'd Divine Intervention somebody that could res, they could res the party. This is back before we had mass res. There were ways to use that to where you could glitch it. For example, in Blackwing Lair in Vanilla, you could cast it on Razor Gore when somebody was controlling him. Basically enter win mode and just clear the encounter without doing any of it. So you know what they ended up doing after having all these instances where Divine Intervention was glitching stuff? They just took the damn thing out. So why don't they just take out spell steal if it's causing such a big issue with everybody? I don't get that. Take the damn thing out. Now let's get back into the blog while I calm down a little bit. Goosefraba. Alright. By contrast, a different group found a bug with Garajal where he could be dragged on top of the gate to his room, such that players standing outside the gate could damage him without being susceptible to his attacks and use this unintended tactic to defeat him. We fixed that bug, but also removed the loot and achievements earned from the players involved and issued account suspensions. In general, it is never permissible to cause parts of a boss encounter to evade in order to gain an advantage, or to use line of sight or collision to get a boss stuck where you can attack it, but its abilities no longer function. So, okay. They can take boss kills away from people who are blatantly exploiting, but for the people who are stealing the buff, they just let them have the kill and nerf it 5% for everybody else. Their logic does not make any sense to me. In my opinion, even if it isn't an exploit, and Blizzard didn't want it to happen that way, they should take the boss kill back. Don't issue bans like they did with the second group. Just take the boss kill away. Say, hey, good job thinking of that. However, that's not what we wanted. So we're going to take this boss kill away. And you're going to have to do it again. If it requires a hot fix so it doesn't happen again, then it should be taken away. The boss kill should be taken away. You know, Blizzard is so damn flip-floppy all the time. Ugh. Clear blue ocean. Clear blue ocean. Alright, now we're on to Will of the Emperor. One more example, also from Heroic Progression. Most of the unintended tactics tend to be discovered and applied by cutting-edge progression guilds, since they're the first ones to see encounters and are often undergeared and struggling to find every possible advantage, which usually means thinking outside the box. That's why they're top in the guild. That's why they're top guilds in the world. Okay. On Heroic Will of the Emperor, the Emperor's Rage constructs that spawned present a real challenge. Their health is significantly increased, but each one of them also produces a deadly Titan Spark upon being destroyed, which explodes on contact to deal massive damage. The amount of damage and attention required to keep up with both the rages and the sparks they produce is one of the core demands the Heroic Mode makes upon the raid group. It was so demanding, in fact, that most of the early groups that reached this encounter were unable to handle the overall DPS requirement. Looking for solutions to this problem, clever players noticed that the mage spell Ring of Frost froze enemies for 10 seconds, had a 30-second cooldown, and had no target cap. Q3 mages cycling Rings of Frost to keep every rage frozen for the entire fight. They spawn in waves of 4 in 25 player mode, resulting in anywhere from 52 to 64 rages frozen in one giant clump by the end of the fight, causing client and server performance issues in the process. On the upside, for the designers observing these attempts, when the mage rotation faltered, the resulting wipes were fairly comical, bearing more than a little resemblance to an endless stream of passengers emerging from a town from a clown car. Okay, that's good. So, okay, lesson we've learned so far from this blog: if you are in a progression guild, make sure you have at least one mage for everything. This was an example of a tactic that made the fight both significantly easier and significantly less fun. With so many enemies entirely neutralized by a small portion of the raid, the gameplay for many of the remaining players was reduced to standing in the middle of the room, nuking the bosses for 10 minutes, and hoping the mages didn't screw up. Not ideal. We wanted to fix it. However, the issue here wasn't specific to the will encounter. We had always fully intended for all forms of crowd control to work on rages, so changing that was not an option. The problem was Ring of Frost. Being able to incapacitate an unlimited number of targets with a single spell cast caused problems. This ended up being a case where the negative cost of hotfixing the issue outweighed the upside of improving the encounter. When hotfixing spells, we do not have the ability to update the tooltips and other data that resides on each individual client. Thus, if we had added a target cap to the spell via hotfix, a mage who attempted to use it on a large pool in a dungeon or a large group of players in a battlegrounds would have thought the spell was broken when it suddenly didn't work on many of the targets. Quite simply, confusing hundreds of thousands of players in all sorts of contexts in order to fix a problem in a situation affecting a few hundred players was not an acceptable trade-off. As such, we changed Ring of Frost, capping it at 5 targets in patch 5.1, allowing for ample notice through patch notes and PTR cycles, as well as a properly updated in-game tooltip. By the time the change went live, access to superior gear from Heart of Fear and Terrace of Endless Spring allowed players to much more readily handle killing the rages as were originally intended. The Ring of Frost is a pain in the ass for everybody, right? And I think that the five target limit's a little low. I think because that's going to significantly hamper use in battlegrounds, for example. I think they should have kept it at 10, but I do think it was a problem. I think it was a problem that if you can neutralize that many people, if you can neutralize 52 to 64, mobs, it needed a nerf. At least they didn't nerf the freaking encounter this time, but they did something. And they waited on this, too, so. I mean, granted, before 5.1 came out, how many guilds actually saw Heroic Will of the Emperor? Probably not that many. 100? Couple hundred, maybe. But I think that the Ring of Frost nerf was a little too much. Now, here's the part where I'm probably gonna rage pretty bad. Pure difficulty adjustments. Oh, I hate this. Ugh. Other adjustments occur simply because a boss is proving to be more difficult than we'd intended, creating a roadblock. Note that we will essentially never make pure numerical, which is health or damage, adjustments to a raid encounter that make it more challenging once it's gone live. If we goof on the tuning in the player's favor, then so be it. So essentially, raids will never be hard. Oh, raids will never get harder, they will only get easier. lovely. It gives me such a vote of confidence. On average, the self-selected pool of guilds that go through the effort of copying characters to our test servers are far more skilled and organized than the typical normal mode raider. And the pickup groups that form tend to be below the target skill threshold. So there is a bit of estimation that goes into tuning normal mode encounters. Because a disproportionately difficult normal mode encounter presents a brick wall that entirely blocks progress, we will act to reduce the difficulty of such encounters, often shortly after they first become accessible, to avoid giving players a frustrating experience. Oh, God. For example, when Heart of Fear was released, we observed that even some guilds that had fully cleared Heroic Mogujon faults were struggling to meet the Berserk timer on normal Garalon. We made several adjustments to the fight to bring its difficulty in line with the rest of the instance on that first day. By the time that most others saw the encounter, it was where we wanted it to be difficulty-wise. Okay. Now, when you tune something too hard that people who overgear the content can't down it, then that's acceptable. If you're in all Heroic Mogujon Vault gear, which I'm sure a lot of these guilds were at the time, and they can't down Garalon, who's a pain in the ass anyway, holy crap, then that's okay. That's perfectly fine. Because if the best players in the world can't do it when they overgear the encounter, then it needs to be nerfed. My problem is when the raid tier's been out and everybody should be, if not outgearing the content, then at the gear that the level that the content was assigned for. And they nerf it then, because not enough people are killing it, then I have a problem with that. I have a huge problem with that. I'm sure it'll go into that. I'm sure it will. Over the long run course of a raid tier, we pay close attention to the community's overall rate of progression. We don't have a target completion numbers for each tier, or for a given number of bosses. We are far more concerned with the rate of change. Progression is fun. Yeah, it's because we actually accomplished something, not because you nerfed it to the ground. Running into a challenge can also be quite a bit of fun. Yeah, that's the whole reason we raid. If we didn't want a challenge, we'd do LFR. Running into a challenge that seems insurmountable is not. Now, it kind of is. Because when you run into a challenge that seems insurmountable and then you actually beat it after practicing and practicing and practicing, then that is the most satisfying kills you will ever get. The last extremely satisfying kill I had was Elegon pre-nerf. When we downed Elegon before it got nerfed, that was a huge kill for us. You know when the last time I felt something like that was? Nefarian in tier 11. Downing Nefarian was a huge kill for us. Because he was hard. Nefarian was a hard boss. And we had just been working at it and working at it and working at it for weeks. And then when we finally got that kill and we got our titles and we got our mounts, oh, it was amazing. And you know what they didn't do with Nefarian? They didn't nerf him. Oh, no, not everybody can down Nefarian. Oh. They left it alone. Because back toward the beginning of Kata, they made everything hard, which was awesome. Everything in the beginning of Tier 11, like all the 5-mans and everything, were hard and difficult, and you actually had to use CC, and it was great. And then, of course, the community started bitching about it. Oh, it's too hard. Oh, the 5-mans take too long to do. Oh, we can't down this boss in Tier 11. And then they nerf it. Oh, whiny bastards. Ugh. I wish they would have had LFR back in Tier 11. Because then nobody would have bitched about it. They could have seen all the content and all its glory and been happy. I like having encounters that seem too hard to beat. Because it makes me feel awesome when we beat it. So when we notice that the rate at which groups are progressing is beginning to stall, we tend to take action. Why? Why? Leave it alone. Let players figure it out. We're not stupid. Well, okay, no, never mind. There's a lot of players that are really stupid. But those raid groups that are forcing themselves to get better at the fight, to practice, they're eventually going to down it. You don't need to nerf every freaking thing. Ah! In Dragon Soul and in Ice Crown Citadel before that, we use zone-wide aura to reduce the difficulty of encounters over time. Some community members, quote, hand on the dial, unquote, jokes notwithstanding, these processes were not automated and reflected an assessment of the latest progression numbers from the live servers. We have a framework for such a system in place for the current raid tier, but we have not yet felt its activation was necessary. Wait, whoa, 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 whoa! Whoa! They have a framework for a system for the current raid tier. So if they don't think that we're killing bosses fast enough, they can turn on the stupid-ass buff. I swear to God, I swear to God, if they do that, I might stop raiding. What's the point? I raid to get a challenge. I raid to down difficult bosses with my friends. If Blizzard is going to just nerf everything, then what's the goddamn point? There's no point to raiding if they're just going to make it so easy that your grandma could do it. SoCal Wild Guy in the chat room says, make the buffs optional, please. Well, the buffs are always optional. In Dragon Soul, you can go turn it off. In Ice Crown Citadel, you can turn it off. But no guild in the world will ever turn off a buff given to them because it gives them an advantage. Nobody ever will. Not unless there's some sort of extra reward for doing so. And Blizzard has never put in an extra reward for not using something. No, I'm serious. If they do this, if they start doing this with every single raid tier, I might be done. There's a lot of people that quit the game when they did nerf tier 11. They nerfed tier 11 when Firelands came out. And a lot of people quit because of that. The famous Total Biscuit rage quit happened because of that. That's why he quit the game. And quite honestly, I don't freaking blame him. If Blizzard's gonna hold everybody's hand so they can make sure they do everything, even though they have a system in place that all players can see the content, if they're gonna do this to every raid tier, then what's the freaking point of LFR? There's no point! I'm really starting to lose faith in Blizzard as a company. You know, I hope that Elder Scrolls Online destroys WoW. It probably won't, but I hope it does. If they do crap like this, if this nerf ever goes into effect, I'm going to be really pissed off. Our goal is not to make sure that the group that currently has defeated 4-6 Mogujon false bosses finishes Shaofir before our next patch. You're putting in a buff so they can do that. Potentially. You have a buff ready to throw in case you feel like it. For exactly people like that. We do want to ensure, however, that they feel reasonably able to continue progressing at the rate they have been with the assistance of gear upgrades gained along the way. If players cannot defeat a boss, it's because they're not good enough to beat that boss. It is not your job to make sure players get better. It is their job to make sure they get better. Goose Frubba. Clear blue ocean. As such, we recently reduced the difficulty of a few elements of the normal difficulty Elegon encounter in a hotfix. Which I've already raged about. This doesn't necessarily mean that Elegon was too hard in some absolute sense. His difficulty presented a welcome challenge to the first wave of raiders who tackled the encounter this past fall. But the folks who defeated Elegon back then have moved out onto Heart of Fear, Terrace, and our heroic raids in the meantime. A nerf to Elegon doesn't affect them one way or another, but allows for raid groups still making those attempts to continue making progress today. It does affect guilds that have downed the boss. You know why? Because there is a little bit of prestige left in raiding. A small tidbit compared to what used to be, but there is prestige into downing bosses. There are entire sites dedicated to raid progression. Like Guildox, like WoW Progress, like WoW-Heroes. There are entire websites devoted to this because that's what your raiders want. They want to feel like their progression means something. If you down a boss pre-nerf, that is infinitely better than downing it post-nerf. And when some scrub-ass retard can down a boss that I worked my ass off to down and flaunt the gear that dropped for him and didn't drop for me off that boss, I'm going to get a little pissed about it. And so will everybody else that downed that boss pre-nerf. Being a progress raider is important to raid groups. That is what keeps them going. I don't care if they don't care about it. You will not drop your raid group if you are working on Shaw of Fear right now. You will not drop that group to go to a group that hasn't cleared Mushigan Vaults because there is a prestige in downing bosses. You are not going to downgrade yourself willingly. If a raid group cannot down a boss, then they don't. Then if they can't learn the skills to down that boss, then they don't deserve to down the damn boss. And that's what it needs to be left to. But no, Blizzard's gonna hold your hand and pat your hair and make sure that you're okay. Hell, why don't they just assign a GM to go in with scrub raid groups who can't down bosses and just have them one-shot the boss for them? Go play My Little Pony or some shit. Leave the raiding alone. Yeah, I cussed. I'm mad. I'm sorry. And then there's LFR. Let's go to the last bit of this piece of crap post. Ultimately, LFR raids are designed to be completed by groups of players that qualify to queue for them. This does not mean that it should be impossible to fail, but unlike our normal and heroic raids, which are designed as progressions of increasing difficulty until you nerf it, LFR is designed to have a flat level of difficulty within each wing, whereas a raiding guild will routinely give up and return another night or another week when they run into a challenge they can't quite overcome. An LFR group that runs into a difficulty spike continues to grind away as new people cycle in to replace those who depart. Most players who ran LFR last fall will recall the ubiquitous, partially complete instances with a dense carpet of skeletons to greet arriving players. Not a particularly fun experience. Yeah, and you just made it worse by not telling people who actually wait a half a freaking hour in queue how many bosses are down. You know, I tell you what, there's nothing more demoralizing than wasting your time in an LFR queue, be happy that it finally pops up, go in there, and then they're on the last boss. Which means you have to queue up for it again and hope that you get a fresh one instead of the same damn boss you just killed. That is one thing they shouldn't have done. They shouldn't have put that in. But, you know, Blizzard's full of a bunch of idiots, apparently. As such, we act quickly to adjust the difficulty of encounters in LFR when needed. LFR is not supposed to be a challenge. Nerf that all you want. I don't give a damn what you do to LFR. It's not supposed to be hard. Go in there with your eyes closed and push one key until the boss is dead. Don't move, don't do nothing. That's what LFR is for. So we can see the content. But leave normal raids alone, and especially leave heroic raids alone. Unless there's some way that is mathematically impossible to kill something? Leave it alone. Until next time, yeah, I'll be waiting for you, you bastards. Ultimately, there is no hard and fast rule or formula that we will follow to determine how and whether to make adjustments to encounters once they are in players' hands. But hopefully this blog has provided some insight into the sorts of factors we consider in our thought process with regard to a handful of specific changes during this last year. You know what I learned? I learned that you're a bunch of crybaby scrubs that want to make sure everybody's happy and take out any challenge in the game whatsoever. I understand why so many people have quit WoW over the years. I bet you there's more people that have quit WoW than are actually playing right now. I wager that. Just in my circle of friends, personal and online, there are more people that have quit WoW that are still than are still playing because of stuff like this. Blizzard is flip-floppy. Blizzard doesn't care about making their game difficult. Blizzard just wants to give everybody free gear. And that's something I don't agree with. Hopefully, this buff that they mention that they already have in the frameworks of the game never comes live. Because if it does, I don't know what'll happen. I'll be very pissed off. Clear blue ocean. Clear blue ocean. Clear blue ocean.
That's it for the show today.
I'm sure that there's not a lot of people that have this view that I do, I'm sure. Especially in the podcasting community. You're probably not going to hear a whole lot of people bitch about this that I do. So what do you think? Do you agree with my view that they shouldn't nerf it for a bunch of noob casuals? Or are you okay with all these nerfs that they're doing? Let me know. Email me, sheepmoonblog@gmail.com. Once again, sheepmoonblog@gmail.com. Or you can send me a voicemail at sheepmoon.com. But yep, that's it. That is the show for today. We ran a little long, to say the least. 2-hour show, wow. That's pretty big, for me especially. So leave me some comments, send me some emails, leave me some voicemails. If you like what you hear with the podcast, if you like what I'm doing with Quest Text, feel free to go over to sheepmoon.com and help me out with a little donation. It's always very appreciated. You can follow me on Twitter at DDTheTank or at Kalemsai is my personal Twitter account. Make sure you go like the Facebook page at facebook.com/DDTheTank. For those of you that do listen to WoW Uncensored, there will not be a show this weekend as I will be in Chicago, but it will be back on next Saturday, and Sheepmoon will be back on next week as well. But for everybody that's still listening, that I haven't blown your ears off with my raging, thanks very much, guys. Love you all. See you next week. Don't break the sheep.